This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Deadly weather in the South. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka on this Monday, June 21st. Glad you're with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
At least 10 people have been killed, including 9 children, after a multi-vehicle collision in Alabama that's blamed in part on Tropical Depression Claudette.
A 30-year-old man wanted for 3 killings in western Oregon has turned himself in to authorities in Wisconsin.
No foreign spectators are allowed at the Summer Olympics in Tokyo, but organizers today said they'll allow a certain number of Japanese fans.
And how the pandemic exacerbated the sexting problem among kids.
Kids are doing more sexting. Kids have been using their devices for a lot longer than they have pre-pandemic, and they've been at home socially isolated, so it kind of makes sense that this kind of situation would be on the rise.
Julie Jargon met the Wall Street Journal on how to talk to your child about sexting. Tropical Depression Claudette is being blamed for at least 13 deaths in Alabama. The National Transportation Safety Board is investigating a deadly multi-vehicle Alabama collision that took place Saturday, killing at least 10 people, including 9 children, during the storm. Authorities said 8 of the children were involved in Tallapoosa County Girls Ranch, south of Montgomery. The program is part of the nonprofit Alabama Sheriff's Youth Ranches, which provides homes for needy, neglected, or abused school-aged children. Michael Smith is CEO of Youth Ranches.
This is such a tragedy. It's a tragedy not only for our ranches. It's not only a tragedy for Alabama. It's a national tragedy when we lose our children.
The wreck involved 18 vehicles and caused multiple injuries. The crash also claimed the lives of 2 other people who were in a separate vehicle. They were identified as 29-year-old Cody Fox and his 9-month-old daughter, Ariana, both of Marion County, Tennessee. Speaking of extreme weather, at least 20 people were injured when a tornado ripped a 22-mile path through southern Alabama Saturday morning. More from this morning's Mike Gavin.
The National Weather Service said the tornado struck as Tropical Storm Claudette was passing over the area. Much of the damage was reported in Escambia County. 2 of the 20 injuries were considered serious. Officials said the EF2 tornado had estimated peak winds of 127 miles per hour and its path measured as wide as 650 yards at points. The tornado caused damage to trees, homes, and businesses. Meanwhile, heavy rain will occur across portions of central and southern Georgia, central and coastal South Carolina, and eastern North Carolina through this morning. Gordon.
Thanks, Mike. Flash, urban, and small stream flooding, as well as new and renewed minor river flooding, are possible across those areas as well. Additional strengthening could occur over the western Atlantic Ocean early tomorrow. A suspect wanted for a fatal shooting and other violent crimes in Oregon that left 3 people dead, including his father, has voluntarily surrendered to police in Wisconsin. Authorities say 30-year-old Owen Nicholson faces multiple counts of first-degree murder and other charges after incidents in the small coastal city of North Bend. The Coos County DA says it began Friday night when an elderly man was run over at an RV park. Minutes later, a woman was found dead from a shooting at a marijuana dispensary roughly a mile away. Mr. Nicholson's father was also found dead. North Bend Mayor Jessica Engelke.
I'd like to express my deepest condolences and prayers for the victims and their families and everyone else impacted by this terrible act of violence carried out in our community. Words fall short of describing the tragedy that took place on Friday.
It wasn't clear how the man got to Wisconsin, by the way, though investigators believe he drove. In a separate incident, one person was killed and at least 6 others were wounded in a shooting Saturday evening near Lake Merritt in Oakland, California. Coming up next, the Democratic Party has found a blind spot.
This is a metaphor. metaphor for your business's journey. Sometimes it feels like the course keeps changing right before your eyes. Whoa! And in order to maneuver it, you need an expert by your side. That's what Dell Technologies Advisors do. They have the tech solutions you need to help you get out in front and stay ahead of the game. Whew! For advice on solutions like XPS 13 laptops powered by Intel Evo platform, call an advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Monday. A new report from three prominent Democratic organizations over what went wrong for the party's congressional candidates in last year's election paints white privilege as a major problem for the party, but not quite in the way you'd expect. The political autopsy suggests that largely white progressive activists pushing a left-wing agenda on the party were blind to the ideological diversity within non-white communities. Details from Josh Kraushaar, politics editor at National Journal. Josh, what did they find?
They found that contrary to their expectations in the last election, more and more non-white voters are moving towards the Republican Party. Still voting Democrat, but the margins are decreasing. More Hispanics in a lot of the biggest battleground states and districts voted for Donald Trump. African Americans, especially in rural parts of the country, leaned a little bit more Republican than they had in recent elections. Asian American voters made the difference for Republicans in a bunch of key races. And they are concerned that their party only speaks to basically left-wing, non-white voters. They speak to activists, not the masses of voters who represent the Democratic Party, who vote for Democratic Party candidates in the past. And they're worried that if this trend continues, it could really be a problem. The whole notion of an emerging Democratic majority based on growing diversity in the country isn't going to pan out. And actually, what's happening is that even as white voters make up less of the electorate, that a lot of non-white voters are increasingly looking at Republican candidates, including in 2020 of Donald J. Trump.
One of the points that you made, and I'm paraphrasing here, but it said basically immigrants are very patriotic and don't like the blame America first approach.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these issues around schooling, education, curriculums, critical race theory, that is especially toxic for Asian American and Hispanic voters. I mean, you're seeing that in real time. Out in Northern Virginia, for example, one of the hotbeds of this debate over what's being taught in the schools is in Loudoun County, one of the largest Asian American communities in Northern Virginia. And you see a lot of Asian American parents whose parents or whose families fled from communist or totalitarian regimes, saying that some of the sort of indoctrination that they see taking place in the classroom reminds them of some of the cultural revolutions they escaped from or their parents escaped from in decades past. They're very alarmed by it. They came to America because they view this land as a land of freedom, and they're among the most patriotic Americans around, and they don't like this trend among progressives, folks on the left, to try to run down the country and frankly impose a certain propaganda, I guess you would say, in the classrooms. They want their students to learn about all sides and have a healthy debate and not be forced to listen to one point of view and being told that that's the one truth.
We're speaking with Josh Kraushaar, politics editor at National Journal. He's got an interesting piece entitled "Can Democrats Embrace Diversity of Views?" The pandemic lockdowns and virtual learning was an issue here also.
Yeah, that was one of the more surprising findings. And we saw one of the exit polls that was taking place after the election actually showed that Trump didn't do as poorly, according to the CNN Edison Research exit poll, than a lot of people expected. And now that we've been able to look at the data surrounding the election results, we're finding that a lot of working class communities, including communities of color, it was just really tough for a lot of Americans to deal with a lot of the regulations. People who were working in the energy industry in Texas, people who have small businesses in South Florida, like the Cuban American community down there, they were having trouble dealing with a very very aggressive regulations that were made. Now, I mean, obviously many were necessary because of the health crisis that was taking place. But when you had these battles like in Florida and Texas, where Republican governors wanted to open up a little bit more, wanted to be a little more liberalizing with their proposals, and they were facing clashes with Democrats, a lot of the Hispanic voters, the working class communities of color in these battleground states actually sided with the Republicans on these issues. And it really, you know, it was a big cross pressure for Democrats. They may have lost some reliable voters because they were seen as the party just too willing to impose restrictions instead of giving people more choice in how they ran their businesses.
Thanks, Josh. Josh Kraushaar, politics editor at National Journal. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Claudette is regaining strength and expected to return to tropical storm status as it nears the coast of the Carolinas just days after 13 people died, including 8 children in a multi-vehicle crash due to the effects of the storm in Alabama. The children who died Saturday were in a van for a youth home for abused and neglected children. Michael Smith, the CEO of the home, spoke with ABC.
They were returning from their vacation at the beach. Many of our girls, with the situations that they grow up in and things that they've done, they never even been to the beach, so they're always excited about that.
Authorities believe the van was hydroplaning. The crash also claimed the lives of 2 other people who were in a separate vehicle.
Number 2.
A tornado ripped its way through Chicago's western suburbs last night, severely damaging homes and knocking out power to residents. The tornado hit portions of Naperville, Woodridge, Downers Grove, and Darien. Despite the extensive property damage, there were no initial reports of any fatalities or serious injuries from the tornado, although emergency crews continued going door to door to check on residents early into the morning.
Number 3.
The Biden administration is preparing new sanctions against Russia for the poisoning of jailed dissident Alexei Navalny. Fiona Hill, the former National Security Council official for European and Russian affairs, spoke with CBS.
Those are actually obligatory because Navalny was poisoned, as we all now know, with Novichok, which is a banned nerve agent, essentially an illegal chemical weapon.
President Biden said he warned Russian President Vladimir Putin during their summit in Geneva if Navalny died in Russian custody, the consequences would be devastating for Russia. President Biden will host Israeli President Reuven Rivlin at the White House next Monday. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki says Rivlin's visit will highlight the enduring partnership between the U.S. and Israel and the deep ties between our governments and our people. John Rahm became the first Spaniard to win the U.S. Open. 2 monumental birdie putts clinched it. Rahm birdied his first 2 holes to shoot a 4-under-67 and win the Open by 1 shot. The victory comes 3 weeks after Rahm tested positive for COVID and had to pull out of the Memorial with a 6-shot lead.
That was a stunning rally for him. Thank you, Jen.
Innovation, resilience, agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Thanks for being with us. As social isolation and device usage soared during the pandemic, digital media experts say the sharing of nude selfies and other sexually explicit messages among teens and tweens has only gotten worse. What can we do as parents? Guidance from Julie Jargon, who writes the Family and Tech column for the Wall Street Journal. Julie, what are we learning?
Kids are doing more sexting. Kids have been using their devices for a lot longer than they have pre-pandemic, and they've been at home socially isolated, so it kind of makes sense that this kind of situation would be on the rise during this time.
Yeah, and it's typically girls getting requests, right? Whether it's from boyfriends or boys they know or total strangers at times, correct?
That's right. I mean, certainly it can go both ways, but based on some of the studies I've seen, it's typically the scenario that you described, which is boys asking girls to share nude photos of themselves and girls feeling pressured to be liked by boys and doing that. And also girls receiving unsolicited nude photos from boys.
So this obviously can turn into some legal trouble. How so?
Well, in many states, this very practice is illegal, whether the exchange of photos between teens and tweens is consensual or not. Just the possession of these kind of photos on one's phone can be considered illegal in a lot of places. And there have been teenagers who have been prosecuted as a result of sending, receiving, possessing these kind of photos. And so it's, you know, they're very serious legal ramifications. Some teenagers have been placed on sex offender registries as a result of prosecution in these kind of cases. So very serious legal consequences.
We're speaking with Julie Jargon, columnist at the Wall Street Journal. Her piece is called Sexting Among Kids is Bigger Than Ever. Here's how to talk to your child. All right, let's take that one. How do you begin that conversation? What should you be saying to your kid?
A lot of the experts I spoke to recommended starting to have these conversations fairly early. And obviously for younger kids, you don't even need to lay out what sexting means, but you can start having conversations about how to be a good digital citizen, not pressuring people to act a certain way online and share things that they don't want to share, talking about what consent means, talking about what healthy relationships look like. The age appropriateness of these conversations will depend on the maturity and age of a particular child. But certainly as they begin to enter middle school, and I think it's important to have these conversations because this is happening as early as middle school. I talked to some teens for this column who said that they started receiving these requests when they were in sixth grade,
wow,
seventh grade, eighth grade. It starts, unfortunately, very early. So it's a good idea to start having these conversations around that time, if not sooner, depending on your child's readiness to kind of talk about these things.
And if you can't, I thought it was a good point in the story, designate a proxy.
Right. Obviously not everybody has a great relationship to talk about these things with their child. And so if this is something that comes up naturally, it's a good idea, according to some experts, to say, why don't you talk to, your aunt or your teacher or some other trusted adult that, a teenager or preteen feels comfortable with.
Julie Jargon at the Wall Street Journal. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Is there something interfering with your happiness? We're all dealing with a lot right now. I'm sure you feel the same kind of added stress I do. Then you should know about BetterHelp. BetterHelp isn't a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional counseling done securely online. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. Start communicating in under 48 hours. Schedule weekly or monthly phone or video sessions or whatever works for you. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. That's why there's a special offer for This Morning with Gordon Deal listeners. 10% off your first month. Visit BetterHelp.com/Gordon. That's BetterHelp.com/Gordon. And join the over 1 million people who've taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp, they're recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. That's 10% off your first month at BetterHelp.com/Gordon.
Taking the day's information and helping you make sense of it all. We're here for you every morning. You're listening to America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Monday, June 21st. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. At least 13 weather-related deaths over the weekend in the South. The Tokyo Olympics next month will allow some Japanese fans, but still no foreign spectators. American Airlines is dropping 950 flights, or about 1%, in the first half of July. U.S. borders with Mexico and Canada will remain closed for another month. Amazon Prime Day begins today, runs through tomorrow. Today's the first full day of summer. And the Virginia man who plans to row for 24 straight hours. Hear his cause in about 20 minutes. This portion of the program is brought to you by Credit Karma. Whether you want cash back, travel rewards, or to consolidate debt, Credit Karma can help you find the offers that fit your goals. Apply with confidence today at creditkarma.com/radio. The United States averted the most dire predictions about what the pandemic would do to the housing market. An eviction wave never materialized, but a comprehensive report on housing conditions over the past year makes clear that while one crisis is passing, another is growing much worse. Details from Connor Doherty, economics reporter at the New York Times. Connor set this up.
So let's just go back a year, and there were predictions of the most dire housing crisis you could sort of imagine, and predictions for the economy to completely fall apart. The pandemic hurt people in service sectors, which tend to be low wage, people in restaurants, people in personal services the most. Those people tend to be tenants who are having trouble making their rent. And so there was this fear of this huge, huge, huge eviction wave. Words like tsunami and avalanche were used repeatedly. And thus far, we have largely averted that. We averted it by giving people tons of money. We put hundreds of billions of dollars in unemployment, extended unemployment benefits, as well as tens of billions of dollars in rental assistance. And that has done a pretty good, that has really helped people stay in their homes. On top of that, tenants, you know, get a lot of the hard work themselves. So where we are now is people, states, as well as the federal government, and some cities are saying, well, how long are we going to keep in place these emergency measures? And is it time to sort of get rid of the eviction moratorium?
What does this mean, too, Connor, for rent that's back owed, right? I mean, the moratoriums are fine, but that's just really buying time. And
well,
this time may not help people.
But that's what the money is supposed to be doing. So that landlord I told you who just collected a $1 million check, that's back rent, right? That is rent that those tenants no longer have to pay because it's now in his bank account,
yeah.
Right? But I think the thing that, you know, I just wanted to sort of add, the unemployment assistance, the extended unemployment and cash-like programs like that, the stimulus checks, those were highly effective in helping people pay their rent. So, meaning that, you know, people got these extra unemployment checks to help them through the pandemic, and they by and large were very able to pay their rent with that. But people who tried to apply to these rental assistance programs found, you know, there's very little uptake. So, you know, I think something like in the report I wrote about, something like 2-3% of rental households had used one of these rental assistance programs, but like a third had used an unemployment check to pay rent. So you can just sort of see when we use these cash programs, they're so much more effective in getting people to actually pay their rent, which, may I remind you, is what landlords want. So I think that we are at this very precarious place. And I should note, I don't want to be all doom and gloom. I mean, we need to sort of take a moment to say the government put something like $5 trillion, you know, through the various programs and PPE, you know, and all that, into the economy. And it did a great job. Unlike in 2008, when we didn't have a big enough stimulus, we had this very, you know, kind of drawn out, difficult recovery, you know, the economy has really kind of persisted, and has the eviction wave never happened, the foreclosure wave never happened. Now the economy is growing very nicely. We have some problems with unemployment still, but, you know, things are momentarily looking up.
We're speaking with Connor Daugherty, economics reporter at the New York Times, also author of a book called Golden Gates, Fighting for Housing in America. His piece is called The U.S. Averted One Housing Crisis, but Another is in the Wings. Touch on, if you would, the lack of affordable housing and how that plays a role in all this.
We have a huge shortage of housing overall in the country. And we in particular have a huge shortage of affordable housing. And it's this massive problem that has taken decades to develop, and it's only gotten much worse. And it is going to last a lot longer than COVID. It is going to take a multi-decade, perhaps multi-generational effort to solve. And, you know, we have, it's this huge problem for America, and a lot of people have started talking about it. As I have talked about, you know, till I'm blue in the face, housing is and is probably going to remain a local issue. So if we're going to start to see traction on our affordable housing crisis, and how do we get that traction? Well, we're going to have to put more money into building, you know, sort of subsidized housing, more, but also just making it easier to build housing overall.
Thanks, Connor. Connor Daugherty, economics reporter at the New York Times. Coming up next, HBO blames the intern.
This is a metaphor for your business's journey. Sometimes it feels like the world is throwing everything it has at you. And to succeed, you need someone to guide you through. That's what Dell Technologies Advisors do. They have the tech advice to help you navigate whatever challenges you're up against and get you safely to where you want to be.
For advice on solutions like XPS 13 laptops powered by Intel Evo platform, call an advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL.
Hey, thanks for being with us. Welcome into Monday. Time now for the Mic Drop with this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, we know that being an intern can be a nerve-wracking experience. You're thrust as a young person into the middle of an unfamiliar workplace with unfamiliar people, oftentimes being asked to do things you have no training for. So you can imagine how one intern must feel after accidentally emailing millions of people. Subscribers to the HBO Max service were scratching their heads after getting a strange email last week with the subject line, Integration Test Email Number 1. And the body only read, "This template is used by integration tests only." Turns out it was the intern who did it, or at least that's what HBO is saying. The company tweeted, quote, "Yes, it was the intern. No, really. And we're helping them through it." The good news is a lot of people can empathize with the intern's plight, and the comments to the tweet were filled with people sharing stories of their own intern screw-ups, many of them involving really embarrassing email blasts. Mm. I got this email last week.
Oh, you
did?
Yeah,
yeah. And I like everybody else, was wondering what the heck happened. So everybody, it seems like, got this email.
So it wasn't a new movie.
That
was called Integration Test Email Number 1.
Yeah, yeah.
Starring Leo DiCaprio.
You never know with, like, you know, some of these kind of these marketing tactics, you know? Everything.
Yeah,
you know, so everybody's
right.
Getting very creative with the way they market things now. You can't just put up a billboard anymore. You got to kind of get creative.
Right.
So you never know what this could have been. It could have been a clue to another email that comes next week. You have no idea.
And these days, I'm afraid to open anything.
Well, that's the other thing, too. A lot of people probably thought it was phishing or something.
Is this legit or not?
In fact, don't tell the company that I actually did open the email.
Right.
They probably wouldn't be happy about that.
Yes, of course.
And I suspect, Gordon, that many of us haven't thought about pistachios in a while, and certainly never thought that pistachios had their own seedy underworld. Apparently so, according to police in California, who say that a truck driver may have been running an illegal pistachio operation out of a trucking yard. The Tulare County Sheriff's Office started looking into this after 42,000 pounds of the nuts went missing from a pistachio company. Eventually, authorities found a truck filled with 2,000-pound sacks of the stuff and believe the plan was to filter them into smaller bags and then resell them. Authorities arrested the driver and posted about it on Facebook, leading to plenty of comments from users about how nuts this person must have been and how quickly they cracked the case.
Mm.
Yeah.
Pistachios.
Pistachios.
Really?
My question is, I guess, how quickly do they realize that they lost 42,000 pounds? That seems like a lot. Now, I don't know how big the pistachio operation is in this part of the world in California, but, you know, you would think pretty quickly you would have noticed that many pistachios were missing. I don't know if this is an ongoing thing.
Mm-hmm.
Did this person think that somehow they weren't going to miss the 42,000 pounds? A lot of questions need to be answered.
I just can't get past pistachios.
Yeah.
This is a thing?
This is a thing that people need to sell on the black market, apparently, Gordon. I didn't know.
This makes me think of, is it an Instagram or a TikTok video where somebody goes around asking people who have these super nice cars what they do for a living to afford that car.
Right.
Hey, that's a great car. You know, it's a Lamborghini, this, that, and the other thing. What do you do for a living, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah.
I sell pistachios on the black market.
I'm a pistachio runner.
That answer has never come up,
right,
as you might imagine.
Yes.
Thanks, Mike. Do you love seafood when you're eating out, but never make it for yourself at home? Overwhelmed by the seafood counter? Unsure of which cut to choose? Yeah, me too. But I learned the key to restaurant quality dishes at home starts with high quality seafood and simple techniques from Wild Alaskan Company. Wild Alaskan Company delivers high-quality, sustainably sourced, wild-caught seafood right to your door. Choose from salmon, whitefish, or a combination, and explore different specials every month. There's a 100% satisfaction guarantee, and you can adjust, pause, or cancel your membership anytime. Right now, you can get $15 off your first box of premium seafood when you visit wildalaskancompany.com/Gordon. Wild Alaskan Company seafood is how nature intended it to be. Always wild, never farmed or modified, and it contains no antibiotics. Get your nutrition from nature with Wild Alaskan Company. That's wildalaskancompany.com/Gordon for $15 off your first box. wildalaskancompany.com/Gordon. Thanks for being with us. Amazon's annual Prime Day is here today and tomorrow, but before you click buy now, you may want to reconsider whether or not you're getting a good deal. Amazon Prime is currently advertising 20% off things like select books, 20% off beauty and other home products. It also promises discounts of up to 50% on Amazon devices. This year's Prime Day is unique given the global microchip shortage, which is disrupting the manufacturing supply chains for things like gaming equipment and computers. Therefore, MarketWatch says don't expect to see any markdowns on highly sought after PS5s, Nintendo Switches, things like that. Other items to skip, home goods. At least one expert says July 4th is when many mattress and furniture stores run holiday blowouts. Also, don't use Amazon Prime for clothing. Experts say the best bargains for clothing is when the seasons change. By the way, Target, Walmart, and Best Buy are holding events to compete with Amazon. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on this morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Tropical Depression Claudette continues its destructive path, leaving at least 13 dead in Alabama. As it strengthens along its path toward the Atlantic coast, the storm is expected to continue strengthening over eastern North Carolina before becoming a post-tropical cyclone tomorrow.
Number two.
The National Transportation Safety Board is investigating a deadly multi-vehicle Alabama collision that took place on Saturday. The collision killed at least 10 people, including 9 children. 8 of the children were involved in a girls' ranch south of Montgomery. The ranch program, part of a nonprofit that provides homes for needy, neglected, or abused school-aged children. Michael Smith, CEO of the facility, spoke with ABC.
Our lead van had 9 passengers, and I'm sorry to say that we had 8 fatalities and 1 survivor.
Authorities believe the van was hydroplaning in the bad weather.
Number 3.
Homeland Security says U.S. land borders with Canada and Mexico will remain closed to non-essential travel until at least July 21st. The 30-day extension came after Canada announced its own extension on Friday of the requirements that were set to expire today. Some U.S. lawmakers and border communities that have been hit hard by the restrictions have pushed to relax them ahead of the busy summer travel season. Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont called recent bills in some red states to change voting rules outrageous as the Senate prepares to vote on a key voting rights bill tomorrow. He spoke with CNN.
We can disagree on all kinds of issues, but taking away the right of people to participate in American democracy is unacceptable, and the Congress must address that in any and every way.
Republicans say the measures are necessary to prevent voter fraud and improve local elections. The Tokyo Olympics will allow some local fans to attend when the games open in just over a month. Organizers set a limit of 50% of capacity, up to a maximum of 10,000 fans for all Olympic venues. Fans from abroad were banned several months ago, but the games will be open to Japanese residents. Well, if you're a working dad, you'll fare best in Massachusetts, Washington, D.C., Minnesota, New Jersey, or Connecticut. WalletHub analyzed the best and worst states for dads based on economics and social well-being, work-life balance, child care, and health. At the very bottom, Nevada, followed by New Mexico, Louisiana, Mississippi, and West Virginia.
Ooh, all right. Thank you, Jen. Coming up next, the man who plans to row for 24 straight hours.
Innovation. Resilience. Agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Glad you're with us. A Virginia man is raising awareness of Alzheimer's disease by rowing for 24 hours straight. John Musser's wife, Robin, was 45 when she first noticed problems with her memory. 5 years later, doctors diagnosed her with early onset Alzheimer's. He'll start rowing this morning, part of the Longest Day campaign to raise money for the Alzheimer's Association. Mr. Musser, who's 58, started training in February for the row. He's a former Army airman and a CrossFit athlete. While he'll weigh in as a lightweight, Mr. Musser aims to beat the heavyweight mark of 295,000 meters in 24 hours. He'll be joined by former Army buddies and volunteers who have loved ones who suffer from Alzheimer's, all of whom will take turns rowing on machines beside Mr. Musser throughout the day. He will attempt his feat in his church, St. Joan of Arc Catholic Church in Yorktown. It'll be live streamed on YouTube. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, GEICO makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. GEICO.com. Easy.